Also coming up, motor workers on strike to demand a resolution to grievances raised earlier this year. We'll hear from them. We have these plus business updates on your decks. My name is Faustina Safo. Take a seat and be my guest. Your election headquarters. Thanks for choosing us. We are your home of independent, fearless, and credible journalism. Now, later today, the presidential candidates we know will sign the peace accord. We also know that the National Peace Council will convene today, Thursday, November 28, with representatives from all political parties and their representatives and their presidential candidates in the upcoming December 7 election to sign that peace pact aimed at ensuring a peaceful electoral process. Well, we know that the peace agreement will bind candidates to uphold peace before, during, and after the elections, committing to conduct themselves and their campaign in a manner that promotes national unity and stability. Well, we have been engaging the political parties on the AM show to get their thoughts about this. So on Newsdex today, we will be speaking to Reverend Dr. Kwabena Opunifrimpong. He is a former secretary of the Christian Council and a former member of the National Peace Council. We also have Dr. Victor Doke. He's a security analyst as we look at the implications of this peace pact ahead of the December 7 polls. Now, I'll start with Dr. Victor Doke, because you're a security analyst. We've been hearing from different political parties this morning on the implications of signing this peace pact. From the security angle, how important is this?
Thank you very much, and good morning to you all and then to all viewers. Now, this is important with regards to security because it tells or gives the impression that the candidates, those who are leading the various political parties, have agreed to abide by the principles of peace. By that I mean they will at all times, before, during, and after, adhere to the fact that they won't, irrespective of any outcome that will go against them, not declare or openly incite their supporters to go onto the streets, right, and then cause mayhem. It also means, from the security standpoint, that they are responsible for any actions that their followers will engage in contrary to the rules and regulations of this country. So basically, from the security standpoint of view, this is what it is. And then also, it sends a signal to the security sector, this election security task force, that these representatives have pledged to the fact that they are going to abide by peace before, during, and after. So anything that happens, they are liable to answer. And they may be picked up or invited to answer questions. Generally, it is supposed to give a sense of calmness to ease the tensions, especially with regards to declaration of results and the uncertainty that will come. In that, you know, critical moment, the chairperson will have to, you know, declare the results. And then let's look at the fact that in 2020, we had some skirmishes with regards to the number of deaths, which hasn't, you know, we haven't seen any positive results till now. There was a peace pact signed then. So then, that issue and what is happening now, relatively, would not, in the eyes of some people, change anything that much.
Mm. And it's interesting you would mention that, because many have argued that what's the fuss about the peace pact? Primarily because it is not even legally binding.
Yeah, it is not legally binding, but once there is an institution leading this peace process, okay, whichever institution that is leading to call on all the candidates to come. You append your signature, you are sent to that document. It is somewhat binding. You are appending your signature, you are assenting to the fact that if you should go contrary to what is being declared on what you have said, you can be liable and you can be what? Punishable. So those of us who think it is not legally binding should have a second view about it. It is very much legally binding.
Well, let me bring in Rev at this point, just to get his thoughts about all that is happening because of his key role he has played in the Christian Council. Reverend Kwabena Frimpong, thank you for your time here on Newsdex. Now, for you, being around for a while, you've seen peace pacts signed every 4 years. In the year 2020, we saw same, but it did not hinder pockets of violence. So what's your thoughts about the political party today deciding to commit to sign the peace pact?
Yeah, let me say good morning to you, your team, and your cherished viewers. We've done this over the years, and for where I stand, it has made significant contribution to our democratic dispensation. Even though our system has not been the best that we all want to see, but on the whole, relatively, we have had a peaceful election, and we have been able to protect our nation and our democracy. Some people always look up to their political parties, but they are not the only ones that signed. The president of the country was signed, Chief Justice, Attorney General, Electoral Commission, IGP, and others. They all append their signatures. The one we did at KNUSC, Great Hall, Asante Hine, added his signature. Another former president even signed. And it gives us a moral obligation. There are those who always see even the legal side of it. But, you know, you want the trust of the people. And the people are saying, will you commit for purpose of accountability? Will you commit yourself to something that if it happens, things don't go your way, you will use legal processes to pursue whatever you want. And you will not mobilize people on our streets to destroy our beautiful country. That is the essence of the peace pact. It doesn't suggest that everything will be perfect. But the peace pact, the implication is, if it happens that you are not getting what you want, you will use legal means. And all those involved, Electoral Commission, IGP, Chief Justice, you will all allow the laws of our country to work, especially the political parties. And even though we have had electoral challenges over the years, we still need the peace pact, and we still encourage all those involved, all stakeholders, to participate in today's signing of the peace pact.
And for many critics of this whole peace pact in the first place, they argue that because it is not legally binding, although it's a good act, there's really nothing to hold the political parties accountable for their actions. We look at pockets of violence recorded in the year 2020. Although we signed peace pacts during that time, how effective is it really?
It's been very effective. Not necessarily lining up people in our law courts and putting them behind bars. But it gives us a moral obligation. I'm not a legal person, so I may not want to jump into even the law and the question you just asked me. But for the sake of your own integrity, the various political parties, your own integrity, your own public trust, how people want to view your political party and the years ahead. Now, that is the advantage we have had. Civil society groups have been able to participate in the peace, public conversations, media people, because we have something to hold on. We have something that we can go back to all the political parties, in fact, the Chief Justice, the Attorney General, IGP, you know, we are able to play back to them. your commitment. You committed yourself to do XYZ, and we want to hold you accountable to that. So morally, it's binding. Even if over the years, like you mentioned, 2020, the unfortunate 8 people who passed on, who were killed, let me say, the Techima one and all that. Yes, but at least even the Techima, we've been able to, court in Wenchi has been able to pronounce some judgment on some people. We still have a long way to go, but we must protect this democratic culture that we as a people have been able to evolve for ourselves. That if you need the people's power, commit yourself to peace, peace process, that you will not destroy our country because you may not get what you want to get through the election. And to me, it's a beautiful thing that today we will play with all those involved, especially the two leading political parties, NPP, NDC, our key leaders. Please participate in this beautiful thing that we as a people have been able to evolve for ourselves.
Should we consider making the peace pact legally binding in the future?
This is another conversation we must have. But already, I believe we have enough legal processes. You know, if you participate in our election, and we have had that. MPP has gone to court when our current president was in opposition. He lost. He lost the case, but he accepted it. NDC has also, the recent election, they've also gone to court. They also lost it. They've accepted it, former President Mahama. So, in fact, our two presidents, current and past, have all, and their parties have gone to court. So, from that angle, it's not like we don't have legal processes that people who are not happy with our electoral outcomes can pursue. They have all. MPP has done that. So from that, maybe our legal brains can help if we need something else. But already we have had instances that they were not happy, but they did not destroy our beautiful country. MPP went to court, and recently NDC went to court. But we need that moral obligation. That is those of us who have been part of this process. That's our concern, that consciously these people must commit to the trust of the people, that you are a man, a woman of integrity. You respect yourself. Commit to the people and let us have your word, and we'll come back to you with your own word. That once upon a time, you promised us that you will not destroy our country. The law courts will do their bit, but the moral side of Ghanaians must also function, and function strongly for Steve.
Thank you, Reverend Kwabena Opuni Frimpong, for your time here on News 6. He is the former secretary of the Christian Council. Let me wrap up with Victor Doke as we end the conversation. I would just shift your attention now to security ahead of the election. Well, we've been hearing from the IGP opening his doors this time to media engagement. Previously, he was quite tight-lipped, and the security service quite tight-lipped. But this time, they're opening their doors to engagement and also giving up information ahead of the polls, especially with areas where they have hotspots. What's your thoughts on how this will help with security ahead of the polls?
Well, I think this dialogue is very much needed as at this time, and it's very important because then it brings to bear the kind of rapport, the kind of process with regards to emergency response that the IGP would want to have on the security front when it comes to relaying of information, okay? Mm. Not only from the populace or from the media, but also from the institution, the police, to the media. For example, now the media picks up an information that there is, some sort of clashes and often in a certain area. To verify, to put it out there, they would need to consult with the security couples, the police, to verify and then come out, authentically. Now, this would also mean that the police would also have to get their intelligence right, pick up the right information, and then relay the information for the media houses to put out there. So it shouldn't be like There's some, sort of allegations about what event is going to happen. So this dialogue is in the right direction. Like it enhances cooperation. It enhances what Unity and the Security Fund, all sister security agencies in that aspect, are also part of this engagement. You need all stakeholders to come and then what bring ideas as to how to go forward. And then also largely to the populace, it is sending a signal that whoever flouts the law will be dealt with. We would only wish that these politicians, right, those are the helm of affairs, those of them also who make statements, okay, that is seen in a way to incite, the populace to act violently, should be picked up, whoever they are. There shouldn't be what some sort of favoritism, in that regard. Anybody who flouts the law should be picked up. So I think holistically, now we can say he's doing okay with regards to engagements and then sending the right signals with regards to security processes, so that we believe the emergency response preparedness, the early warning signs that will be picked up through the systems, the various systems that they have put in place, will be very much effective during also how quickly they will respond to what some pockets of violence that may arise would essentially give, them that positive reaction largely to how they would what be able to control the election as this they term as their baby. So the onus lies on them, right, to not get the personnels neutral as we would want them to be, respond to emergency situations, and then arrest anybody, including any political elite who seem to make statements to incite the people against the peace. And that will build more trust. And even the populace, the citizens, would contribute a lot with regards to information to help their intelligence.
And another key thing that the police service has made us aware is that they are willing to de-escalate tension should it arise, but they are also willing to use brute force when it comes to ensuring that the peace and security we would be enjoying in the upcoming polls would not be marred. And that has raised a lot of concerns about the abuse of human rights. How best do you think the police can contain issues, especially when it comes to security during the election, but not abuse the rights of people?
Right. So it is all tied to how quickly they pick up intelligence about something being in the offing and then respond what effectively and efficiently. Without that, then it means what things would escalate, and then they would have no option to de-escalate, but then to what engage with what force. That is where the problem is. But if they have a system that is robust, as he's saying, to respond quickly and then have preventive mechanisms in place, then you are rightly sure to say that things will not degenerate into violence before they come in. Because when they come in, when things have degenerated into violence, then it will be difficult to employ what? De-escalation approaches. But then they would have no choice than to what? Engage. I think now the issue is just to drum home, advocate, sensitize about the need for more engagement than what violence. But rest assured, yes, we know there are hotspots. There are areas which are classified as the hotspots that may even, result in violence. How do we assess and then address all these issues? So I think once we have a robust early warning system in place, we are rightly sure to say that the responses will be quick enough, will be efficient and effective. And then by and large, the personnel will go in before things degenerate. But however, if, should in case, we have pockets of violence, right, then it means that we will employ the leaders, would employ the security agencies as much as they can to use dialogue and not to use brute force. Because we know what happens when brute force is used against the other party. Then we would have allegations such as what? The state security is being used to intimidate one party against the other, to favor one party against the other. all in a bid to help what, one party win the elections. And this we cannot have, because then the other party who is at the losing side would get what, infuriated, and the youth would engage. So this we can have. As much as possible, they should just use the diplomacy approach, preventive diplomacy approach, more engagements, more dialogue, and then trying to, as it were, as whatever they use, they say, de-escalate the situation. But that doesn't mean some criminal elements would not, you know, take advantage of the situation. They may. Now, I'm sure from his perspective, using brute force is in line with those criminal elements that would want to disturb the peace of the country. And criminal elements, i.e. political vigilantes, right? Their activities. So we know how this group is a threat to the peace and security by and large elections. So those are the categories where we expect that one. The force, in accordance with the law, will be used to deal with any criminal element. Vigilante groups would want to be used to disturb the activities of these elections and the peace at large.
Thank you so much. Dr. Victor Docke is a security analyst. Thank you for your time here on Newstex. Now, away from that, let's do some election-related stories. Voters in the Strongman constituency are putting pressure on political parties to present clear, actionable plans to address their top concerns, the high cost of living, youth unemployment, among others. Well, in this edition of Constituency Lens, Carlos Coloni takes us to Isijaman constituency in the Eastern Region, where the two leading parties, the NDC and the NPP, are locked in fierce debates over who has the better record and plans for the constituency. Yeah, accepts.
For this constituency lean in December, what factors are actually influencing voter decision here in the Isijaman constituency? I believe you want to know, and so come with me while we speak to voters to understand the factors that will inform their vote on December 7th.
We the youth, we are suffering from work and then money. We don't have, some of us, we don't have parents to support. So we need them to help us.
Everything is too much. The fare, I mean everything is high. So they need to do something about it.
Here, they are not buying because the economy is very high. The passengers don't have money.
The MPs, if we vote for them and they win, they don't know us.
Oh, the youth employment in this community is very difficult because we only have VRA and the Vosa Lake. So it's like if the course you study doesn't correspond to that area, that means we are not going to get any employment.
The kind of nepotism that this government has really shown, that you have to belong to a particular circle before you are given some kind of attention. And you look at the basic things. Actually, I've really gone round, especially in Akosombo, and you see poverty staring at your face. You see people are suffering.
Right now, even Kenke, 2016, Kenke was one city, and we use it for campaign. But now Kenke is 7 cities, 8 cities. So I think that if any party that can come to power and they reduce the cost of living, I will vote for that person.
This, you see this thing? It's how much? 5 cities.
I have 3 kids. Looking at it, the school fees alone is even killing me. They are saying free education, but it's, forget about the free education. The books we buy, the things we buy, it's even more than the free education.
For the past 8 years, I have achieved a lot that the whole district assembly could not match. I have achieved a lot that the whole MPP government have not been able to do.
That cannot be true. That is palpable falsehood. Okay. Look, many of the things that the outgoing member of parliament, Thomas Ampinyanku, speaks about, are projects that are sponsored by NGOs. And now the people know.
Who brought in the NGOs?
Look, I'm saying that sometimes the NGOs come by themselves.
Reporting from Isijaman constituency, my name is Carlos Coloni.
Still on elections, the National Democratic Congress has assured prison inmates of their commitment to modernize and humanize the country's prison system. The Ashanti Regional Communications Director, Abbas Nuruddin, says this will start with a change of name to Ghana Correctional Service, where technical and vocational departments will be well equipped for training. Speaking to inmates of the Kumasi prison, the party assured of increasing the daily feeding rate of 1 cedi 80 pesos to cater for the nutritional needs of inmates. Nana Aljima followed the NDC to a campaign at the Kumasi Central Prison and filed this report.
Aside from congestion in the country's prisons, there have been continued complaints over the poor feeding of inmates. Due to inflation, the Ghana Prison Service has insisted the 1 cedi 80 pesos feeding grant per inmate is woefully inadequate to cater for 3 meals daily. The NDC reveals its plans to deal with the challenges of the prison system, improving technical and vocational training for inmates to ensure their proper resettlement in society. Ashanti Regional Communications Director of NDC, Abbas Nuruddin, emphasized a decongestion project will be implemented in the prisons if the party regains power.
So there is a need for the feeding grant made to the prisons to be increased so that they can have a semblance of good living. Again, most of the people in there have been on remand without trial for quite a long time. And that for us is an abuse of their fundamental human rights. So there is a need for a certain expedited justice system be put in place to ensure that those that have been on remand without any semblance of trial to have a fair trial so that they would know their fate, either they are leaving prisons or they are staying. Again, there is the need for the legal aid department to get closer to areas like this.
The NDC's manifesto states the next administration will encourage community service and other non-custodial sentences for minor offenses. Mr. Nuruddin explains the welfare of the inmates remains a priority the John Mahama administration.
There are some people that have been incarcerated beyond the legal bracket imposed by law. Some people have been given 6, 7, 8 years for common misdemeanors that should attract a maximum punishment of 3 years. So all in all, we believe there is a need for our justice system to be overhauled.
The Kumasi prisons has 2 polling stations with over 2,000 registered voters. Meanwhile, the NDC has made a promise to improve housing for staff of the Ghana Prison Service while maintaining the capitated pension scheme for them. The NDC donated food items and money to the inmates. For Joy News, Nana Ojima reporting.
Well, still on politics, the President General of the Center of Awareness Global Peace Mission, Professor Samuel Atu-Duncan, is asking political parties and politicians to prioritize human life and dignity in their quest to win power as the country gears up for another general election. He spoke after signing a memorandum of understanding with Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center. There's more in this report.
This partnership aims to promote peace, stability and effective conflict resolution initiatives across the region. Dr. Duncan urged politicians to avoid violent behavior and rather focus on creating a more peaceful and prosperous society for all Ghanaians. The center, led by Professor Samuel Atu-Duncan, believes signing the Memorandum of Understanding marks a significant milestone in advancing global peace and will bring together key figures from various sectors.
So bringing this collaboration, the MOU signed today, means that there's a need for us to foster unity, peaceful coexistence amongst the people of this world, and also to offer training in terms of the value of man, laying much emphasis on the value of man and the fundamental law of peace. Man is the most precious thing God has ever created. So nobody should take anybody's life, destroy anybody's properties. We should live in peace just as Ghana has been in peace. When one does not believe in what you believe in, does not make the person an enemy. So we should not use this election as a pathway to destroy ourselves.
Commandant of the Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center encouraged the youth to be wise and discerning when choosing their leaders.
And make no mistake, this is your country. Don't let any old politician deceive you. This old man, don't let him deceive you. It's yours. You all, me. I'm an old man. I'll be gone very soon. So don't let me deceive you. Let's get it right. And the point is that when you get this right, this election right, violent free, choose the best. The world is watching us. People will come and invest here. And it's good for you. Even those who want to travel, a lot of people they want to go and study abroad and all that. If you get it right, it all affects you. If you get it wrong, nobody's going to give you a visa to go anywhere. So let's get it right.
Thanks for staying with us here on the Joy News Channel. We'll be back with business updates after this quick turn.
Hi, good morning. Welcome to Business. My name is Daryl Kwao, Chief Executive Officer of VW Ghana and President of the Automobile Association of Ghana. Jeffrey Opompepa has described the prospects of the automobile industry as positive. Despite some challenges, he is of the view the assembling of cars locally is supporting the sector. He spoke to Joy Business at the launch of VW's new Amarok car in Ghana.
The new Amarok is the only pickup in its class to come with an automatic post-collision braking system, 17-inch disc brakes at the front and 16-inch disc brakes. Jeffrey Opompepa called on government to support the automobile industry to create more jobs.
So, with the car, the new Amarok that we have at the moment, we're launching today. This is the newest model that among our pickups. Which we are launching today. This vehicle is based on also a combination of Ford that it's got one of the highest rating, and then this car is a 10-speed for Amarok, also as a pickup. But the reason why we have this product is we have also looking into the market, and then it fits with our terrain. That's why we're bringing this product in. So this vehicle assembling here was one of the VW, our biggest decision to have this car, because the engine fits with our petrol or fuel quality here.
He also called for more collaboration within the sector.
Talking about also automotive, it's about standards. And these standards is across board globally, and we can, since we are here now that producing or assembly vehicles, we need these hands to also adapt the new technology. That is why we are looking at integrating the informal sector into our new auto industry, to learn, to give them the education, to get to know the new skills, because most of the vehicles are becoming more electronics now.
Now, Deputy Minister of Energy Collins Adumokumensah has indicated that pursuing rigorous reforms is key to sustaining the energy sector. According to him, to ensure that Ghana remains a leader among peers in the sub-region, it is necessary to channel more resources towards ensuring that the sector is sustainable and thriving. We're speaking at the launch of the Energy Academy and eForum series.
The Energy Academy by the Energy Commission is expected to provide cutting-edge training, foster innovation, and build capacity in energy policy formulation, renewable energy, and efficiency to help realize the national energy goals. Delivering his address, Deputy Minister of Energy Collins Adumokumensah said, despite the many reforms in the energy sector in the past years, more resources need to be channeled into the sector to sustain it.
Over the past three decades, Ghana's energy sector has undergone transformative reforms that have had the foundation for the progress we see today. From regulatory frameworks that open the door to private sector participation, to effort to improve energy access, reliability, sustainability. These reforms have powered industries, driven economic growth, improved the quality of life for millions of Ghanaians. However, as we reflect on our achievement, we must recognize persistent challenges. The global energy landscape is evolving rapidly, with a strong push towards decarbonization, technological innovation, sustainable energy solution. For Ghana to remain competitive and resilient, we must adapt and innovate.
Executive Secretary of the Energy Commission, Engineer Oscar Monuneza, said the Energy Academy will provide a continuous pool of experts to grow the sector.
The Energy Academy we launched today is a direct response to lessons from the past. We recognize that the cornerstone of a thriving energy sector is its people. Skilled professionals, empowered by knowledge and innovation, are essential to tackling the challenges of energy security, access, and sustainability. The Academy will provide cutting-edge training, foster innovation, and build capacity in energy policy formulation, renewable energy, energy efficiency, electricity, natural gas regulation, local content, and local participation.
The launch of the Energy Academy and E-Forum series was themed 3 decades of energy sector reforms in Ghana, reflecting on performance and shaping a sustainable future.
Well, turning to other news now, Chairperson of the Trade and Gender Subcommittee under the Ministry of Trade and Industry, Nadinswa Ite, is advocating a simplified trade regime within African countries to enhance trade activities. According to her, the removal of cumbersome documentation and trade processes are critical in achieving the aims of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. She spoke at a regional training workshop in support of AFTA implementation in Accra.
The regional training workshop in support of AFTA implementation aims to foster collaboration to bridge linguistic divides across economies in Africa and actively shape a more integrated and inclusive continent to improve trade activities. In an interview, Chairperson for the Trade and Gender Subcommittee under the Ministry of Trade and Industry, Nadinswa Aite, advocated for a simplified trade regime in Africa to reduce the barriers to cross-border trade.
Those crossing the border on a daily basis, most of their goods are agriculture, and some of them trade in, you know, maybe the beads and textiles, you know, cloth. So it's not a big consignment that they carry across the borders. So there's a need for them to be able to do their work without any form of delay, harassment, unnecessary or cumbersome documentation procedures that are not necessary.
Director of Export Promotion and Regional Integration, Abdul Kamara, who represented Secretary General of the African Continental Free Trade Area, Wamkele Mene, said African economies must work together to increase its relatively slow growth rate of 1% per annum.
Over the past decades, Africa's industry value added has grown at a relatively slow rate of 1% per annum, reaching approximately $443 billion in 2023, compared to $847 billion for India and $6.5 trillion for China. This highlights the urgent need for accelerated industrial growth to position Africa as a competitive player in the global economy. The AfCFTA presents a unique opportunity to address the challenges by leveraging existing production capabilities to enhance value-added production.
Executive Director of the Center for Regional Integration in Africa, Professor Leslo Honolo, too, emphasized the need for traders to avoid working in silos.
I think that we in Africa, within our economies and generally in our lives, we tend to work in silos. So we at the Center for Regional Integration appreciate the fact that particularly for SMEs, it is an arduous task to actually cross borders and trade when you're doing everything by yourself. But they need support from the government. They need support from themselves. Already you have a burgeoning network of SMEs who are coming together to look at the issues that they face within the economy.
The workshop was themed Bridging Anglophone and Francophone Markets Through Trade Facilitation, SME Partnership, and After Value Chains.
All right, and that's it for this segment. Back to you, Fosti.
Thank you, Dara, for bringing us business updates. And that's how we wrap up the bulletin. The Motor Workers Association of Ghana, they have withdrawn their services nationwide. We'll tell you all about it at 12 p.m. when we come your way with Joy News Today. That's how we wrap up the bulletin. For more news, please log on to myjoyonline.com. Good morning.